This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The consequences, I suppose, on the surface, one would say, of not showing sufficient or not showing fitting covered to a rov. More deeply, we defined it in terms of interfering with the effectiveness of a rov in his community. And the consequences which we found were rather dramatic. What I'm going to do this week is look at the roots of this concept of kovod altogether. Where does it come from? What's this whole thing of honoring somebody? And what is it based? What is the principle? And I'll take that further, talking more specifically about the relationship between a Rav and a Talmud next week. And then the week after we'll finish it off. How far covered? What are the degrees of covered? What I want to use as our source material for really examining what all this covered is, what I want to use are the dinim of kibud av va'em, showing respect to parents. And that's a question which the Gemara already poses. Shoal with Rabbi Eliezer. This is a Gemara in Kiddushin. The parsha, the sugya on kibud av va'em is in Kiddushin from Daf Lamed to Daf Lamed Beis. Shoal with Rabbi Eliezer, ad heichan kibud av va'em. How far does one have to go to fulfill the mitzvah of honoring a parent? And they bring the one famous case of Dama ben Simo, where they wanted precious stones. The Chachamim wanted certain precious stones from Dama to use in the ephod, to use actually in the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, and they were prepared to pay a fortune for it. But the key was under his father's head, and he wouldn't wake his father up to go and fetch the key. That's one. He had the opportunity of making far in excess of the real value of the stone. The only people who really would pay anything for the stone were the Chachamim. For everybody else, they could get this stone, they could get another stone. It wouldn't make terribly much of a difference. But for the Chachomim, this had to be the stone. So they were prepared to pay anything. The amount here that we're talking about that was offered was $600,000. I don't know whether it was $600,000 or 600,000 rand or 600,000 sterling, but it doesn't make terribly much difference. In those days, 600,000 rand was still a lot of money. And a lot of money today too, but not like it used to be. Today one begins to lose respect for millionaires. This can ganze have to be a millionaire. In the old days one forgets what it used to be a millionaire, to accumulate R1 million or $1 million. It was unbelievable. One whole hasogas change. A million is nothing anymore. Everything becomes small in a funny sort of way. 600,000, but 600,000 was an unimaginable fortune. You can't even, what it is, you're talking of the equivalent of thousands of millions of rands. There's no way you can imagine what 600,000 was. And the key, the father was asleep, and the key was under his pillow, or in his room. And he wouldn't wake his father up. He let the deal go. That's a non-Jew. Lashona Acheres, it so happens the following year, not Nakarish Baruch Hashchora, the Rebbe Nishlam decided to pay him off. Shenodele Pora Aduma Be'edroi, a Pora Aduma, a red cow, was born in the flock of Dama ben Asino. Nichnasu Chachme Yisrael, it's for Omer, and Yodea Ani Bochim, so the Chachonim came, and they wanted to buy the Pora Aduma. Now, if they were prepared to pay 600,000 for the stone, you can imagine what they're going to be prepared to pay for the Pora Aduma. So he says to them, "Yodea ani bochem shimani mivakish mikem kol momen shabayilum atem noisnim li." I know that I can ask for all the money in the world, and you will pay up. That I know. Elo ein ani mivakish mikem elo isum momen shifadeti bishvil kovida. But all I'm asking from you is the 600,000 I lost when I didn't wake my father up. The Yomer Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Chanina said, "Ma mi she'eino imetzuve voise kach." If this is a man who has no mitzvah of kibud av va'em, really, he's not mitzvah in kibud av va'em. He's not bound by the halachas of kibud av va'em. except in a normal moral sense, but not by all the dinim. How much more so is somebody who is obligated? How much more so is somebody who is instructed and is chayav to keep the mitzvahs of kibud avayim? So here you get one idea of, in terms of quantity, how much do you have to sacrifice? How much do you have to be prepared to sacrifice a business deal for kibud avayim? Right, so we're not talking about spending money. There are different halachas about how much money you actually have to spend. But how much money do you have to be prepared to lose just to save the honor of your parents? And what are we talking about? What honor? We're talking about waking him up from asleep. And you think the father would be terribly upset? What father would worry if you wake him up and he says, "What are you waking me up from?" Father, 600,000. It's worth waking up. I'll tell you what, father, you can have 100,000 of the 600,000. What father would be upset about being woken up for it? People stay awake all night, go into town and look at the office lights, and you'll find people awake there all hours of the night. Go into their offices and ask them, "Why are you awake?" They're trying to save something or to put together something. What are they working on? Something that's going to bring them in 100 rand, 500 rand, 1,000 rand, 10,000 rand. What are they staying up all night for already? So for 600,000 rand, any normal human being would be prepared to wake up. But that's his business that he's prepared to wake up. Dama ben Nasino is not prepared to disturb his father's sleep. Disturbing sleep, by the way, is a very serious aveiro, because you can never pay it back. Anything else you steal from a man, you can pay back, but sleep you can never pay back. And sometimes a person needs that sleep. And again, back to what we discussed a few weeks ago, how little things can trigger off all sorts of other things. A man who needs that sleep and has a critical day the next day, you can be responsible for all sorts of mistakes being made just because you woke him up at a time which was disturbing to his sleep pattern. One must remember that when one's talking about disturbing a person's sleep, it's not just a quantity matter. It's not just saying, well, he's got 8 hours to sleep, so what does it matter if I took 5 minutes away from him? Because if that 5 minutes comes in a critical time of his sleeping pattern, it can wreck the rest of his whole night. He can wake up in the morning as if he didn't sleep the whole night. It's not just a quantitative thing. When a person's ready to wake up, he wakes up. And if one interferes with that beforehand, it's not good. I also think, but I have no scientific evidence for it, the doctors can work on that, but while we're on the sleeping subject, I also think that when you know what time you're waking up in the morning, you adjust your sleep pattern in such a way, sort of consciously or subconsciously, to gear it that you should be finished sleeping by then, not just that you should wake up by then. It's not just a chokhmah to wake up, but it's a chokhmah to be finished that which has to be achieved while you're asleep. All sorts of things that have to be achieved while you're asleep. So if you know what time you're waking up, doesn't matter how little sleep or more, that you figure that out, but you can organize yourself to have finished your sleeping pattern by the time you wake up. But if you're woken up without that, if you're woken up in the middle of a sleeping pattern, that can be very serious. It can actually throw one out a lot. One begins to understand the mysterious nefesh of women, mothers who have to get up and are disturbed in the middle of the night by babies, the pressure under which they are during the daytime. And we'll have some more of that a little bit later. Anyway, so Dama ben Nasina would not disturb his father. Another story about Dama ben Nasina. Pamachas hayo lovush sirkun shel zohov. He was wearing a golden knight, sold a for aduma for 600,000 rand, so he was now a wealthy man, and he was wearing a golden suit. With gold thread. And he was sitting among the Gedolim of Romi. Now, you know, I told you that we don't know what a million is anymore. A million has just come down in our estimation. And we don't know what Gedol Torah are anymore. The great people of Torah, they've also just dropped down to nothing. We don't even know what the Gedol Romi are anymore. The greatness of the great people of Rome, the splendor in which they lived, the honor that was accorded to them, the tremendous power that they had. And these weren't just people who were puppets of society or whatever. These were real leaders. These senators and these people were really at the top of society. And Dama ben Nasina was sitting in his gold suit at a meeting of the Roman Senate. He was invited to attend a very, very special occasion for Dama ben Nasina. Uvasa imo, and his mother turned up at the meeting. His mother was not a normal person. And she started tearing his clothes off, his golden thing. And she started beating him over the head. And in front of all the Gedolim of Rome there, she spat in his face. And he didn't disgrace her. It was Dama ben Nasina, a non-Jew. So the Gemara goes on. Rabbi Tarfon Havilei Hayyina. Rabbi Tarfon had a mother, had a certain mother, like, you know, this son, mother, Rabbi Tarfon's mother. The Chol Emas Havas Bayo LeMesak LePuria. Whenever she wanted to go to bed, Gochin, he used to get onto his stomach, he used to bend over, a solid law, and she used to step onto his back and then onto the bed. He was her footstool. The Chol Emas Havas Nachis, and whenever she wanted to get off the bed, Noch Soilu, she called him, Rabbi Tarfon, up he came to her bedroom, and he bent down, and she stepped on his back and got onto the floor. The Rosh says that she was an old lady when this used to happen. It wasn't just that that's, you know, all her life she used to use his back to get on and off the bed. But the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara just says it was his mother. And even if it was an old mother, there are not many sons that do that. After the Kamishtabech Be Midrash, so he came to the Beis HaMedrash and he was describing in the Beis HaMedrash how he's Mekayim the mitzvah of Kibud Avim. He was taking pride in the excesses to which he goes in honoring his parents. Amrilei, they said to him, Adayin lo yigato lechatzi kibud. You haven't even gotten to half the level of Kibud Avim. That's nothing yet. Don't think that's Kibud Avim. Klum zorko arniki befonecho liyandolo yislanto. Has it ever happened that she's thrown your purse into the sea in front of you and you haven't disgraced her? That you've kept quiet about it? That's the test of Kibud Avim. Not just what you're prepared to do and you're prepared to humiliate yourself and all the rest of it. Wait till she really interferes with you. Wait till she takes your possessions and throws them into the sea and then see if you can keep your cool. Then if you can keep your cool, that's Kibud Avim. If you can't, it's not. That's the levels we've done. You know, we talk about Yiddishkeit and mitzvahs and Torah and frumkeit. We don't know what we're talking about. So what it means to be a frum Jew, what it means to be a religious person, what it means to have a religious family and to come from a religious family, that's what it means. That's what goes on in the home. Those are the standards of the home, and they're not standards demanded by the parent. Once they're demanded by the parent, it loses a lot of its glitter. They're standards adopted by the children, just because that's the dinim of Kibud Avim. That's how you relate to a parent. How does one get there? How does one do such a thing? How is it possible that one could go like Dama ben Nesina, that one can be embarrassed and humiliated? This one, that a parent can take one's money and throw it away, and you keep your calm. I was discussing a number of cases with a Johannesburg psychologist the other day, and he was remarking that there's a surprising degree in Johannesburg, and I think he was implying particularly among religious people, a surprising degree of hidden aggression and resentment towards parents. Children who on the surface behaved wonderfully to parents, when he dug beneath the surface he found tremendous aggression and resentment towards the parents. And he was asking me how to handle it, certainly with religious people. I said, how do you handle it? Well, he gets them talking. What do you get them talking about? Well, he gets them talking about their parents. So he gets them talking a bit of Lashon Hora, and he gets them talking a bit of the opposite of Kibud Avim. How can you do that? Well, but they've got to get this aggression out a little bit. And I said, what do you then advise them to do? I advise them to have a go at their parents and have an argument with them and thrash it out with your parents. Wash it against the Torah. It can't be. It's not done. And we don't understand these things when we talk about being frum and being religious and all that. We just don't understand what goes into it. And we quietly become influenced by what is accepted in society, and we're moving further and further away from essential principles in Yiddishkeit. And these are essential principles. You'll see in a moment how essential. But how do you get to this level? I want you to know that in Singapore, they have just introduced a law that it is obligatory for children to look after their elderly parents. It's against the law for the children to give the parents out or to send them to a home or anything like that. It is against the law. It is a punishable offense. And the reason they did that is because the Prime Minister of Singapore is one of the few leaders left in the world, one of the few people who does what he believes is right in terms of his culture and his background and his religion. And if you want to live in Singapore, you just toe the line. And if you don't want to live in Singapore, you go somewhere else. I think I told you one story a few weeks ago about what he did to a taxi driver in Singapore. Same man. And he's made this a law. Why did he do it? Because it is the view of most educationalists and political leaders in the East that the opening of the first old aged home in Hong Kong a few months ago, and I think the first old aged home in the East, talking about that whole area of the Far East, those millions of people, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the first or one of the first old age homes in the Far East, they regard that as the beginning of the end of their society. They see that as everything going. They see that as one of the most serious things that have ever happened to their society. They're more worried about that old age home in Hong Kong than they are about the Russians and the Chinese and the Americans and the Falkland Islanders and everybody else. They're more worried about that little old age home in Hong Kong because they see that as undermining the whole structure of Eastern life. And anybody who hasn't been there doesn't understand what they're worried about losing. It's the only part of the world where people still work. It's the only part of the world where people are basically honest. There's no such thing in Japan as something getting stolen. Nothing ever gets stolen from anywhere. Nobody touches something that doesn't belong to them. You can leave cash in a taxi drive, in a taxi, and he will take days off work tracing you until he finds you. That belongs to you, not to him. One doesn't know. We're living far from it, and we're living so enmeshed in the dirt of the West that we don't understand a lot of what they've still been able to preserve. And I try to probe and probe, how have you done it? What is it? What do you have that the others don't have? How have you escaped the decadence of the West? There are many examples. Test is only one that I'm giving you. Many, many such examples. They said, it's the way we treat the old people. That's a long discussion which we don't have time for now, how they see the connection. But they see that as the absolute foundation of the society which they've been able to construct and develop. That's what it means to be from. Rabbeinu Bechaya says in a sefer called Kad HaKemach. Rabbeinu Bechaya was the Talmud of the Rashbo. He wrote the Chovos HaVavos, and he wrote the Kad HaKemach. And in the midst of Kibud Avayim and the Kad HaKemach, he says a fascinating thing for which I'll bring you a proof from the same Gemara. He says the Torah just tells us in the Ten Commandments, honor your father and your mother. It doesn't tell us how. What are you meant to do? How do you honor your father and mother? Answers Rabbeinu Bechaya, it's very simple. Honoring your father and your mother is simply an extension of the previous four commandments. It's not a new commandment. The first commandment is, I am the Lord your God. The second one is, there shall be no other God before me. The third one is, taking God's name in vain, is Shabbos, I think, right? Taking God's name in vain. The fourth one is Shabbos. And the fifth one is a natural continuation. It's not a new commandment. Honor your father and your mother. Okay. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, in the same way that you honor God, that's how you have to honor your father and your mother. How do you honor God? By those first four commandments. That's God telling you how to honor Him. You honor Him, number one, by recognizing Him, by accepting that there is only one God. Likewise, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, you've got to accept that you have parents. He would say, that's not a big chiddush if you've got to accept that you have parents. Is that honoring your parents? Oh, and how? You've got to accept that you've got parents. You've got to know what a parent is, and accept that is a parent. Number two, you've got to know other God, no other parents. These are your parents. And whether you like them or you don't like them, whether they've been good to you or they've been bad to you, it makes absolutely no difference. These are your parents, and there shall not be any other parents before them. That's it. That same concept that we have with the unity of God, we have with the unity of the parents. That there is no one else, only your parents. You don't take God's name in vain. Likewise, you mention a parent's name, you don't mention a parent's name at all. It's against the deen to mention a parent's name. And when you do mention them by saying Reb or whatever it is before them, that you don't say a father's name just without mentioning before, Reb or whatever it is, you say it with a certain fear, you say it with a certain respect, you don't swear in their names. And Shabbos, he learns the whole thing as to what Shabbos has got to do with it, that one doesn't serve and honor one's parents with the expectation of any kind of reward or inheritance. One does it just because it's right. The Gemara says in the same sugya on Daf Lamed, Tanu Rabbonin, we learnt in a braisa, Ne'emar kabedes ovicho ve'simecho, ve'ne'emar kabedes Hashem ve'hencho. It says, honor, uses the word kabed, your father and your mother, and it says, honor God with your money. Hishvah kosov kibudavim lekivin lekovod amokim. The Torah compares honoring parents to honoring God Himself. He has a proof for Rabbeinu Bechaya. It's the same principle. Ne'emar ish imo ve'oviv tiro, ve'ne'emar Hashem lekecha tiro. It says each man must fear his father and his mother, and it says you must fear God. Hishvah kosov moiras ha'avim lemoiras hamokim. The Torah compares and parallels the fear of the parent to the fear of God. Tanu Rabbonin, we learned in a brayse, Shloisha Shutfin Hein Biyodim, that in the Vilna Gaon this afternoon. There are three partners in a man. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Oviv, the Imai. A man is constituted by three elements. God, mother, father. That's what a human being is. Bizman she'odu mechabed es ovi ve'es imo, when a man is busy honoring a parent, omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu ma'ale ani aleim ki'ilu dati b'neim. V'chibduni, it says, if I am among them, and they honored me. Whatever they're doing to their parents, it's as if they're doing to me. One cannot divorce in Torah moral laws from ritual laws and all that kind of business. I respect my parents, but I don't acknowledge God. Or I acknowledge God, but I don't respect my parents. It's all nonsense. You can't start chopping things up. Your parents are partners of God. And one can almost say, ki b'yochel, your parents are God, in a sense. Because God is, and it sounds, you should turn off the tape recorder, it sounds completely heretic what I'm saying, but there's a Trinity here. Right? There's a godliness here of which mother and father form part. There's a unit here. It's not just God and mother and father on the other side. God, mother and father come together to create a human being. These are three functions, three factors that form one function. And it goes further. And here's the real chiddush of what I want to say this evening. What I want to say this evening is that the essence of it is honoring a parent. That's the essence. Honoring God, we learn from honoring a parent. Sounds the wrong way around, doesn't it? But that's how I think it is. Same Gemara says the following. When God came out with His Ten Commandments and He said, I am the Lord your God and there shall be no other God before me. You know what the world said? He wants honor now. Everybody's got to honor Him. That's even God Himself, when He said that you've got to honor me, the nations of the world interpreted that as an ego trip of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Kivan she'omar kabed es avicha v'simecha. When he got to the fifth commandment and he said, honor your parents. Chazru v'hoidu l'ma'amorus harishoynes. Then they realized the truth of the first statement. He's not on an ego trip. It's not only himself he wants honored. He wants parents honored as well. That means that that the original ones were true as well. Says Rashi, and listen to this carefully. Chazru v'hoidu l'ma'amorus harishoynes. Kol shchein shechayev odem b'chvoidoi. How much more so is man now obliged to God's honor? She'at hu shutaf v'vriyosu ke'ov ke'ovi v'imoi. Because he too is a partner like the father and the mother. V'chayu v'moysu m'surim b'yodo, and his life and death is in God's hands. So in reality you could learn the whole thing out as the non-Jews did from a parent. That you've got to honor a parent that everybody accepts. The non-Jews were quite prepared to accept that. That makes sense. It's clear. Now that you've accepted that you've got to honor a parent, you can learn out from that. Kol Shchein, how much more so do you have to honor God Himself? It doesn't work the other way around. The first principle you need to know is that you honor a parent. Of course, it works independently as well. One has to honor God irrespective of a parent, and one has to honor a parent irrespective of God. But in terms of what's easier for us to integrate, the first principle which is easy to integrate is that you have to honor a parent. Having established that fact, now you can draw a parallel in the Kol Shchein. You can say, now how much more so do I have to honor God? And therefore it would emerge that a man who doesn't understand that he has to honor a parent is unlikely to understand that he's got to honor God. It's unlikely. And his frumkeit and his religion is likely to be a farce. It's likely to be untrue and it's likely to lack genuineness. And you'll see why as we go on. The principle is from the parent. Now why is that? Why is it so obvious that you've got to honor a parent, and from there you can draw a kol shchein to God? The reason is because the principle, the underlying principle of kovod, is hakoros hatov. It's recognition, that's all. Kovod is the response to somebody to whom one owes a lot. That's what kovod is. We see that in the Rashi also. Why do you have to honor God? Because He too was a partner in your creation. So why are you honoring a parent? Why are you honoring God? Because they gave you life. Without them you have nothing. Absolutely nothing. And that everything that you've got stems from what they gave you. That's the basis of Kibud Avim. The basis is acknowledging that you owe your life to your parents. Once you've acknowledged that you owe your life to your parents, you can acknowledge also that you owe your life to God. But a man who's incapable of seeing that he owes his life to his parents, what chance is there that he's ever going to realize that he owes his life to God? And you don't have to be a big religious person to know that you owe your life to your parents. You just need to know a little bit of biology. So what chance is there that a man who doesn't even is unable to connect the biological fact with its natural moral consequences? How is he going to be able to figure out the moral consequences of believing in a God where there's no biology, where it's all religion and spiritual? He has no chance. And therefore you now understand why Kibud Av V'Em is on the first set of tablets of stones. Kibud Av V'Em is not an interpersonal law. Kibud Av V'Em is the basis of the man-God relationship. If a man doesn't know how to relate to his parents, there's no way he can relate to God. Still, how does one relate to parents who are so nasty to one? Like Doma ben Nesino that we had, and like Rabbi Tarfon, well, Rabbi Tarfon's mother not so much, but this, yeah, Rabbi, when the, like what they told Rabbi Tarfon, that until your mother would throw your person to the sea, you're not really mekayim the mitzvah. What is Kibud Av V'Em? I've spoken to you, what is Hakoros HaTov? I've spoken to you about this before. And as I say, there are going to be three shiurim on it now. This tonight. Next week we'll discuss the unique relationship of Rav and Talmid and what it involves in this particular context. And the following week we're going to discuss the power of Hakoros HaTov, because Hakoros HaTov is not just a response. Hakoros HaTov, acknowledgement of indebtedness, gives one a power and a potency beyond anything else. It's one of the most powerful drives in the human being. And we'll discuss that as a drive in the human being in 2 weeks' time. Meanwhile, there are just a couple of things I want to look at in Hakoros HaTov, that all Ma'amrei Chazal which I've used before, and the principle which I've used before, and I just want to revise it and then use it over here. Hakoros HaTov, we find it, there are dozens and dozens of Chazal without end. Medrash says in Shmois Parsha Dalad, when God said to Moshe, come, I'm going to send you now to Paro, he said, God, I can't go. Moshe Rabbeinu, why? Because Yisroi opened his door to me and accepted me as a son into his house. And a man who opens his home to another human being owes his life to him. There's no way I can pay him back. The Medrash goes on. We'll deal with the rest of the Medrash in 2 weeks' time. He had to go and ask permission from Yisra. God has said to him, Moshe, go to Paro on the most important errand of your life, the most important errand of anybody's life. You're going to set Jewish history into motion now. Now is the time, you're going to Paro. Says Moshe, hang on, God, I've got to go and say goodbye to Yitro first. Why? Because he showed me hospitality. And a man who opens his home to you, you owe your life to him. I've got to go. So he first goes to Yitro to say goodbye. And to in fact ask permission to go. So that already one sees the scale of Hakoros HaTov, but one sees it in stranger cases even. in Bamidbar, I think it's chapter Lamed Aleph, when God tells Moshe to go and wipe out the Midianites because they'd been terrible, they'd been terribly cruel, and they'd shaken the whole foundations of the Jewish people. God says to the Midianites, God says to Moshe, go and wipe out the Midianites. Moshe sends Pinchas, doesn't go himself. Asks the Medrash, what kind of business is this? The Medrash in Yalkut Shimoni. God says to you, go, and you send somebody else to go. Answers the Medrash, it wasn't correct for Moshe, who was looked after by Yisroi, who was a Midianite, to be the one who would wipe them out. But it's an instruction from God. Can it be wrong? Can it be untrue? Instruction from God, all very well, but it's also an instruction from God that you've got to be a mensch, and that the Midianites have to be wiped out, that I know. That we're going to have to wipe them out, that I know, but not me. I won't do it. It wouldn't be nice for me to do it. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even where now we're beginning to come onto our problem, even where they're absolutely the bottom of the earth, people have caused tremendous harm, he won't do it. Imagine somebody, for example, who had the opportunity, let's say, just imagine somebody had absolute foresight of what Hitler was going to do standing in 1938, and God would come to him and say, okay, go and kill Hitler. And he would say, you know, Hitler's a German, the German people have been hospitable to me, I can't go. Say, I'm a shugina. It's not a shugina, it's a mensch. Somebody else has to go. I'll find somebody to go, I'll train him, everything. Hitler has to be killed, that there's no question, and I'll do everything to help it be achieved, but I won't do it. It's Moshe with Midian. We had the case that I spoke about somewhere else this last week, where the daughters of Yitro come back to Yisrael and they say, we're early today because Ish Mitzri Hitzilonu, we were saved by an Egyptian man. And the Medrash asks, what do you mean you were saved by an Egyptian man? You were saved by Moshe. What, some Egyptian man this Moshe Rabbeinu was? What do you mean an Egyptian man? Says the Medrash, no, they didn't realize themselves how accurate their words were, how true it was. And the Midrash gives the example of the man who gets bitten by a scorpion and he goes down to the river to wash his wound. As he's down at the river, he sees a child drowning and saves the child. Parents of the child come running down and they say, thank you, sir, thank you, we owe our child's life to you. He says, you don't owe your child's life to me. What I did is only natural. Anybody who saw a child drowning would pick the child out of the water. You owe your child's life to the scorpion that bit me. That's the degree to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes. And here we're coming into something still stranger. We're finding an element of having to show gratitude to an object that doesn't have feelings. Why do you have to show a scorpion gratitude? And it goes still further. When Yaakov says to Yosef, go down to Dothan or wherever it was that the brothers were, and ask about the welfare of your brothers and the sheep. The Medrash asks, all very well to go and ask about the welfare of your brothers, but what do you have to ask about the welfare of the sheep for? Are the sheep that important? Answers the Medrash, something from which you benefit, never mind someone from whom you benefit. Something from which you benefit, you have to care about. You have to inquire about. You have to take an interest in. You owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And not only do we find that you've got to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu to animals, scorpions, to sheep, but you've even got to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu to inanimate objects. When Moshe, God says to Moshe, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Emor el Aharon, tell Aharon, Kach matecho netei yodcho amei mi Mitzrayim, take your staff, your stick, and hold it out over the waters of Egypt. Al naharosom, al yoreim va'ag mehem, on their streams, their rivers, and their lakes. Val kol mikvei mei mehem, and on all the collections of their waters, v'yiyu dom, and it will turn into blood. And there will be blood in the whole of Egypt among the trees and the stones. Why iron? Says Rashi, quoting the Medrash, "Lefi shehegin hayoir al Moshe kishenishlach l'teicha." Since the river protected Moshe when he was thrown into it as a baby, it supported him, it gave float to his basket. Lefichach loy loko al yodoi. Therefore, the river was never smitten by Moshe. Loy bedam, not in the instance of the blood, the loy betzvardeim, and not in the instance of the frogs, the lokal yidei Aaron, it was Aaron who had to do it. Yes, the rivers had to be smitten. It had to be done. Blood had to be, the water had to be turned into blood, but not by Moshe. That's where he learned it from, says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levit. That's the source of this whole Yisoid. That Moshe understands that even when God says go and kill the Midianites, it doesn't mean that he must do it himself. If he wasn't allowed to smite the waters, how much more so wouldn't he be allowed to smite the Midianites who had done them well and who were real human beings? That's our Koros HaTov. So we've got our Koros HaTov to Yisroi. Look, I can understand. Yisroi was hospitable. Moshe wants to ask him permission before he goes, even though God has instructed him to go. But that you've even got HaKoros HaTov to the Midianites, to those wicked Midianites, because they had a Zayda a long time ago that was good to Moshe? That's already difficult to understand. And Midianites are right, but now you've got to have HaKoros HaTov for scorpions and for sheep. And not only for scorpions and for sheep, but even for water. For inanimate objects. What does it mean? What are you going to show gratitude to people who are unable, and to things who are unable to even recognize that you are showing them gratitude? What we see from here is a very important yesod, and that is one more chazal. Rabbi Chiya had a kometzaro ledvisu. Rabbi Chiya had an unhappy marriage. It happens even among great people. The shidduch runs into problems. Could have been that it wasn't so suitable to start with. It could be all sorts of things. One never knows with a shidduch, but it happens even among great people. And his wife used to make his life a misery. Ki ava mashkach midi. Whenever he found anything, whenever he came across anything, it says Rashi dover aveilo, anything which fitted her, which suited her, a piece of clothing, a piece of jewelry, anything that suited her. Tziyele besudre maisiniyele, used to wrap it up in his kerchief and take it to her. Amale Rav, so Rav says to her, I don't understand you. Well, meketzarele lemar. She's causing you all this unhappiness. She's so nasty to you. And wherever you go, you pick something up for her, you buy something for her, you're always thinking of her. What's going on? Amale, he said to him, dayenu shemegadlois bonenu matzilois asonu minachet. All that she does to me, it's true, she causes me tremendous harm and tremendous upset and aggravation. But the fact that she grazes our children and that she saves me from wandering to places I shouldn't be wandering, that she's deserving of everything I can possibly give her. Here again we see that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not dampened by the negative of the person. The fact that there is positive, that's it. Here again, Rabbi Chaim Shmuel Levit is medayik, that he, in one breath, he talks about raising their children and saving him from sin. Raising his children, he says, I understand. The Mesilus Nefesh, as we spoke earlier about interrupted sleep, what interrupted sleep is, and interrupted sleep once and twice and three times in a night. Interrupted sleep is almost worse than no sleep at all. No sleep at all, you adjust yourself to it and your rhythm changes and everything, but to go to bed expecting to sleep, lying with one ear awake in case you're awoken, and every hour or two one of the children wakes up and you're up and you're back in bed and you're up and you're back in bed, and the next day you've got a day just like you've had before. For a woman, that's backbreaking work. That's Mesivus Nefesh. So understand, Rabbi Chiya says, look, however aggravated she's making me, all those nights that she got up and all those days that she worked, that I could sleep at night so that I could get up and learn and teach in the morning with a fresh mind, do you think I don't owe her the world? That I understand. But that she saves me from sin, how does she do that? No Mesivus Nefesh involved there, just by being a woman, by being a nice attractive woman. That's what she does, by saving me from sin. That's not with effort, that's just by being a woman. Says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levit, it makes no difference when it comes to HaKoros HaTov, and it's based also on a Rabbeinu B'chaya. When it comes to HaKoros HaTov, to gratitude, it's none of your business to estimate how much effort the other person went to. It's how much you benefited that is important. And now the Yesod is beginning to develop. And this is the Yesod, as I said, which I did develop with you a long time ago, but these things need to be repeated, and particularly in the contents in which we're discussing it at the moment. And that is, we're seeing that number one, HaKoros HaTov is not a factor of how much effort went in. It's none of your business. Number two, HaKoros HaTov is not a factor of by whether the other person is even going to be conscious that you are showing that HaKoros HaTov. It's on you the obligation, not on them. It's not an interpersonal thing. It's just in you. The other thing can be inanimate, it can be a scorpion, it can be water, it can be a wicked Midianite, it makes no difference. You have got to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, irrespective of whether the other can sense the HaKadosh Baruch Hu which you have demonstrated. Why? Understand gratitude. Somebody does something for you, it is polite to say thank you. That's about as far as the Western idea of gratitude goes. What a response, it's polite. But we're talking about something which seems to go far beyond that. It's not just a response, it's much more than that. What we're talking about here is the drive in a human being for independence. The drive for a human for independence is not achieved through rebelling. That's not how you achieve independence. You don't achieve independence by running away from your parents. You don't achieve independence by showing what a big boy you are and asserting your own view. You show independence by not owing anything. Eved loive leish malveh. If a man owes something, he's a slave. If you have an overdraft, you're working for the bank. If you have a bond on your house, you're working for the building society. If you owe somebody money, you're working for them. They control you, they own you, they direct you. That's how it is. And it's unfortunate that we're living in a society where borrowing money is just part of the way things operate. It's very unfortunate. And the high interest rate we're experiencing at the moment, I think, is a gift from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because it's about time that people understood that you've got to live with what you've got. There's no big thing in borrowing money and being so subservient to the people to whom you owe money. You will be much happier off in a hovel with one meal a day and one suit of clothes and owing no money, but living in a palace owing fortunes. You'll be a much happier person. And if this business of the high interest rates achieves that among some people, it will already be a worthy thing to have achieved. Eved lo yevil leish malveh. A person has to feel the distaste for dependence. A person has to feel the distaste for being dependent, but in a real sense. Being dependent means owing. When you owe, you are dependent. If you don't owe, you are independent. Now the true facts of life are just such that it's impossible to be independent. We all owe somebody something. And it's not possible to isolate oneself to the point where you owe nobody anything. It's just not possible from the moment you're born. You owe your parents your life. So it's not really possible to be independent. But at least it's possible to move towards independence. It's just sort of like approaching infinity. You can never really get there, but you can be approaching it. You can be approximating it as closely as possible. That concept is. There's a drive towards independence which is achieved by paying off debts. When a man's whole life is dedicated to paying off, to getting rid of his ba'alei chovos, to getting rid of his creditors, that's a man who wants his own independence. That's a man who doesn't like feeling completely beholden to people all the time. And the way that, I repeat, the way not to feel beholden to people is not to walk out of their lives. That's what a real bastard does. No other word for it. I want to be independent, off I go on my own. That's not a mensch. The mensch is, I want to be independent, I will pay you back, and then I'll go off on my own, if I'll ever go off on my own. The man who wants to go off without paying back, what's the kunz? What's the chap? Where's the big boy? The people who run away from South Africa because people here make money on the back of the black man, and they sit in Israel or in Australia or in America, and they draw their dividends from South Africa. And they went with their pockets full and with lifts. And where did you make that money, sir? On the back of those same Africans. What's the big thing? My independence. I won't be part of that society. If you don't want to be part of that society, rid yourself of all your assets and donate it to the black people, and then go. Don't go with your pockets full. There's such distorted morality. Such distorted ideas of what's independent and what's right and what's wrong, it's just unbelievable. And a person who wants to stand on his own two feet without paying off first is a person who is egoistic to the extreme and has absolutely no understanding of what his obligations really are. And when I developed this, when we talked about HaKadosh Baruch Hu last time, and I developed this Yesod altogether, I explained to you how this was the basis of all morality and of all religion. That without HaKadosh Baruch Hu there is no morality whatever. And we're going much further without the Hakaras HaTov. There is no religion, there's no relationship to God. Now once one understands that Hakaras HaTov is basically the desire to pay off debts, then I ask you, what do you do with a parent? Now you're an adolescent, you're growing up now, you want to be independent. How exactly are you going to achieve that? There's only one way to achieve that, really, that's to commit suicide. Give back what you got from them. That's really the only way you're ever going to do it. As long as you are breathing the air of this world, I'm sorry to tell you, whether you like it or not, glad to tell you, depending how you get on with your parents, you are dependent on them, you are obligated to them, and there's nothing at all you can do about it. That's the fact of a moral life. If you deny that, you're denying the basis of all morality. And it makes no difference what else they did to you. Because what is it? Imagine you're destitute. Imagine you don't have a roof over your head, and you don't have clothes, and you don't have another meal. Imagine nothing. And you have a wife and children, and you don't know where you're going to get the next penny to support them from. They're starving. And a man comes along and says, look, you know, you look a nice guy, you've probably got a head on your shoulders. You need for a house? No, he says, 40,000 rand in Johannesburg, I can get something. He says, no, you don't want to lose 40,000. Take 70,000 rand. Get yourself a nice house already. Make yourself comfortable. Get yourself some clothes. How much do you need for clothes? He says, no, I can get a suit for 60 rand. No, a suit for 60. Go and get yourself 5 suits for 100 rand and for your children, your wife. Go and set yourself up. And then when you've set yourself up and you've got your house and you're comfortable, come and see me and we'll get going in business. And he sets him up and he gives him money and he lends him money. Over the years, this man becomes a millionaire. And after many years, he's standing in shul, on Yom Kippur, or at a wedding, and he sees this benefactor of his go past, and the benefactor didn't say hello to him. Didn't see him, he was busy, he was preoccupied, he's fully bored. He didn't see me, he didn't say hello, what is he? Am I nobody? Starts taking offense. What right have you got to start taking offense? And if the big benefactor didn't just not say hello to you, let's say he slapped your face as he walked past you. Let's say he stole 1,000 rand from you. Let's say he did you in, and your business halved its size, but you're still well off. Let's say you're not so well off, but you're earning a living, you're comfortable, and he's the one who wrecked your business. So what are you going to say? I don't owe him anything anymore. Look what a so-and-so he is. Look what he's done to me. Oh no. He's the man who put you on your feet. And as long as you're benefiting from that, you owe him no matter what else he does. You can't weigh them off. When a person is giving you life, what are you going to say? But look what else you did to me. But I didn't take away the life I gave you. And you'll say, but you didn't give me life for my good. You wanted children, so you had me. The scorpion didn't bite him for the good of the child. And the sheep didn't support Yaakov for their own good. For Yaakov's good. And the Midianites didn't do anything themselves. It was only their grandfather Yisro who did something. It doesn't matter. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got nothing to do with the motivations of the benefactor and nothing to do with the energy and efforts of the benefactor. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has only got to do with how much you owe. To what extent are you where you are because of what you got from somebody else? And you got life from your parents. And nothing else can cancel that out. For that you owe your life. You can enslave yourself to your parents, you can get on your back and they can stand on you, they can slap your face and you can smile at them, they can take your money and throw it into the sea. As long as they leave you your life, there's no way you can pay them back. And there's no way you can get out of your obligations of kibud av v'em. Nothing at all. It's defined in halacha, there are chapters in halacha which one has to learn, what one does have to do and what one doesn't have to do. And when one has to listen to a parent and when one doesn't have to listen to a parent. But the principle of kibud av v'em is always there and one can never escape from that at all as long as one's living. It's not possible. Even after they're dead. Certainly not until one is dead oneself. And one begins to understand how it can work. Once you understand that kibud av v'em is at its roots a principle of Hakaras HaTov, and you understand what the principle of Hakaras HaTov is, it's a desire, a drive for independence. It's a drive to try and pay off. And you realize that one has to be busy with kibud av v'em from morning to night. And the Gemara says a very frightening thing after the story of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Yosef ki ava shama kal kara deime, when Rabbi Yosef heard the noise of the stick of his mother coming by, And he used to hear because Rav Yosef was blind, he couldn't see. Only when he heard his mother coming, Omar Eikum Mikamish Shechina. I wasn't so far on when I said that heretic thing. He said, let me get up in the presence of God. That's how he saw his mother. Omar Rabbi Yochanan Ashrei Mishaloi Chamoan. Rabbi Yochanan died, Rabbi Yochanan's parents died before he was born. His father died before he was born and his mother died at birth. Rabbi Yochanan said, happy is the man who never saw his parents. What does he mean? It just means because at least he has not been over, he has not transgressed the principles of Kibbud Av V'Em. But anybody whose parents have lived in their lifetime, there's just no way you can fulfill that obligation. And it willy-nilly, you're over every day. And it's a serious Avera. The important thing of tonight is that it's the basis of everything. It's the basis of one's moral life, it's the basis of one's religious life. If one denies that, one denies everything. One doesn't have the basis with which to operate on a moral principle and on a moral basis. That's how one, I said to you at the end of last week's share that we were going to deal with this week, how you show cover to somebody who in your opinion doesn't really deserve it. Well, it depends, deserve and doesn't deserve, it depends what you're weighing off here. If it's somebody from whom you've got nothing, then it might not be that necessary to show him any more honor than one shows a normal human being. And one day we'll have to talk about that too. What are the gedorim of Kovod Habrias? What is the minimum level of honor that you have to show everybody? But beyond that, maybe you don't have to show him if you've got nothing from him at all. But once you come onto people from whom you've benefited and you start weighing off one against the other, comes to parents, there's no way you can weigh off. And whatever else they've done to you, they gave you life, and that can't be denied. And therefore you are eternally obligated to them to the extreme. There's no way that you can write off that debt. What we will do next week, as I said, is we will define what a Rav is in Yisrael. Never mind that in his community. What a Talmid Chacham is. How the Jewish people benefit from their Talmidei Chacholim in general. What a Rav is in a community, what the relationship between a Rav and a Talmud is. That we'll analyze, and then refer to it in the context of Kibud Av V'Em. We'll extend the principles of Kibud Av V'Em further. Because in Shulchan Aruch, the section which deals with Kovod HaRav, which is what we were dealing with last week, the very first seif of that halacha, which is Reish Mem Beis, this you've heard how we've talked about the honor of a parent. Chayev Odom Bichvod Rabbe VeYirasoi. A man is obligated to honor his Rebbe and to fear him. Yesoi MiBeshel Aviv, still more than the father, if that's imaginable. So we need to understand what's going on here. The ultimate we thought was a father, was a parent, as the partner of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Where does the Rav come into that? That we'll discuss and we'll define halachically. And then, as I said to you, in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to come back to our Koros HaTov in general and discuss with you the power that can be achieved from a man who has this feeling of our Koros HaTov, what he can achieve with it, the heights to which he can climb in the various things that he has to undertake during his lifetime.